This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my co-host, Lobot. Hello, Lobot.
I still don't think that's his name. The problem is that that character actually never spoke, so this is going to be an easy episode for me. All it was this.
I don't actually remember enough of the detail to know whether that's true or not. But
please email us if you actually know which movie we're talking about here.
Yeah. But what I do know is that we have a slide to talk about on the state of open source between 2022 and 2023 and 2023 and 2024. And it is one of my favorite slides. It is, which open source Linux distribution does your organization use today? And one of the big things that happened during the first time this server was run, or not the first time, the last time it was run, as far as our graphs are concerned, and the most recent running, is, of course, Red Hat making the choice to end of life CentOS as it used to exist, and instead create the brand new CentOS Stream. And this, I think it is fair to say, is one of the things, at least, that has contributed to a very, very significant shift in this Linux distribution's map. Or, yeah, that's just a little teaser. But Jon, I can see you're desperate to talk.
Okay, if you're not on YouTube, you missed this. I mean, a lot has changed here. Not just a CentOS thing. Actually, CentOS is quite high still on this year's list as well, which has its own problems. I'm sure we'll discuss that in a second. But I did make two little red notes here of Alpine Linux and Arch Linux, which pretty much disappeared from view. Arch Linux went from the second spot at 20% to the one but last spot, 8%. Mm. And Alpine Linux is now gone from 18 to 13. And yes, the Red Hat decision to go to do away with CentOS had effects, also personal for me, because the Roaring Elephant podcast used to run on CentOS. We no longer do. But these two have been split off from the Red Hat tree a long time ago, and we discussed this a little bit earlier. They had pretty much their own code bases, and they weren't really attached. So yep. I have no idea why they went down so much.
Well, so I have some suspicions. And to not bury the lead, like, the big change here is Ubuntu has gone from 29% of use in the previous survey up to just over 46% in this survey. And the second closest is Debian, down at 23%. So, yeah, Ubuntu has nearly double the amount of usage of Debian, and Ubuntu and Debian are the top two. I think one of the things that has changed between the first iteration and the second iteration of this, it's not just the Red Hat's decision to end of life CentOS as we know it. I think the other thing is that Ubuntu themselves, Canonical, the organization behind Ubuntu, and the Ubuntu Open Source Project themselves, have made a significant effort into providing more and more minimalist images for Ubuntu Linux. And the reason I say that is things like Alpine and Arch especially were very, very often used as the base for container images, because you could carve them up in a way that you know, very, very minimal dependencies. And that is one of the things that Ubuntu, as far as I'm aware of, and you know, it's not something that I follow super closely anymore, but you know, I still keep a touch on open source and Linux OS movement, because it's something I'm genuinely kind of have always been interested in and will always be interested in. And as I say, Ubuntu made a lot of efforts this past couple of years to allow their OS to be more suitable for being the basis of containers. I think that is one of the big shifts that we've seen. And of course, you know, those changes, I think those changes have been one of the things that's made this kind of very significant shift here.
Yeah, it makes sense. Ubuntu, for me, has always been a desktop operating system. And I guess looking at these numbers, Ubuntu now becomes a monopolist, and we're no longer talking about the year of the Linux desktop, but talking about the year of the Ubuntu desktop now.
That's the other... And for me, again, like full disclaimer, I did work at Canonical for a number of years. I'm very, very familiar with how prevalent they are on the server estate, in the cloud infrastructure state space, and that sort of thing. Like,
that never made sense to me that they were so prevalent on the server state.
They really are, and that has only continued to kind of accelerate. But anyway, that's insider knowledge, but I just have a very different view of how Ubuntu is used in the enterprise to maybe a lot of other people, because I've been peeked behind the curtains, should we say.
Yeah, I do think this is going to potentially spell problems for the future, because Ubuntu, Canonical always had an opinionated view of what should happen with Linux. They've taken some left turns when the rest of Linux took a right turn. Mm-hmm. Before they were at the top of the list, but still with 30%, they had to compete with the rest of the ecosystem as well. Now they're reaching almost 50%. That isn't going to curb their enthusiasm for doing it their way, and the rest can take the highway, which is a bit worrisome for me. And that's also why I personally decided, when I moved away from CentOS, not to go with Ubuntu, but to go with Debian.
Yep.
Because Debian, yes, it has its problems. It's a pure OSS thing, so a lot of the new stuff isn't in there. But again, if you're doing a web server and you're not doing anything very fancy, just a web server, a WordPress site, things like that, very capable, a lot of stuff on the internet to be found on it, and again, very, very stable. And with Ubuntu, that has always been a bit my problem. Even if I had a VM running on Ubuntu for a desktop VM or something like that, upgrades scared me. With CentOS, they were worrisome, you had to take care, but typically that went okay. Debian was usually the problem that a couple of years ago I had stuff running on .NET in mono on Linux, and Debian simply didn't have that because it wasn't considered, mono wasn't considered open source, it wasn't in there. So that's why I actually went to CentOS at that point. Nowadays that's not a problem anymore, but Debian will always have some gaps in what they have. And yes, there are other repositories you can use to fill those gaps, but then again, you get more dependencies, it gets harder to maintain. But now having to choose for a new one, I did look at new ones, the Rocky Linux and what's the other one called again? I had Rocky Alba Linux, which last year were at the bottom of the list, and this year haven't gone up that much. Alba still kind of, went up a bit, went from 3% to 9%, but still early adopter only. And I'm looking for Rocky Linux, they went from 9 to 15%. So yeah, they come up, but not huge ups. Yeah. And yeah, I guess most people went for Ubuntu here, because Debian also went up a little bit. Yeah, 16 to 23%. So yeah, Debian also got a nice bump there.
Yeah, I think the overriding thing is like a lot of the distros gained a little bit of a bump. Like they all got a little bit of a bump from the CentOS change, but Ubuntu is the one that changed the most, and that's why I think it's more related to the containerization push that the folks at Ubuntu and Canonical have made. But the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting is take a look at where AWS Linux was last year, you know, below the bottom half by quite a significant margin, whereas now it's, you know, in fourth place. Just, you know, nearly 20% of people say that Amazon Linux is their primary open source Linux distribution, which I think is kind of interesting. It's a it's another one of those Linux distros that comes from a you know, a Red Hat derivative base. Originally, it's very much its own beast nowadays, and the Amazon folks put a fairly sizable amount of investment in its creation and not its creation, but its ongoing maintenance and investing in its future. So it doesn't, on the one hand, it doesn't surprise me that it's here, but it does. I am surprised that it's so high, because of course the big thing about Amazon Linux is it's only available from AWS. So that to me suggests that there are a lot of folks that are all in on being locked in to AWS, because that's their primary platform of choice. And I get it from an almost, not so much ease of use, but ease of adoption perspective. Like, if you're going with AWS, why wouldn't you use AWS's Linux distribution? But there's always a little bit of me that wants to think, well, you know, what if I want to move in the future? What if I want a little bit of separation from you know, my cloud provider, my hyperscaler? Would it not be better to go with a Debian, an Ubuntu, a Rocky, I mean, dare I say, even an Oracle Linux, because at least that's also available on all the different cloud providers. Don't worry, I'm not actually recommending that anyone go Oracle Linux, but, you know, just to make a point.
I don't think it's as clear cut as that, because when you go to a public cloud, you can't just deploy Debian, because they're running on hypervisors and you need those I/O translation layers installed. Mm-hmm. Now, Amazon's based on Xen, if I'm not mistaken, originally. So typically, if you go to a hyperscaler, you will get versions of your standard thingy. Yeah. And I used to work at Microsoft, full disclosure, so I have experience with Azure, and I ran a lot of CentOS there in the days. But not CentOS. No, it was OpenLogic's version of CentOS, which was augmented with the hyperscaler I/O hypervisor, whatever needs and things. So you're kind of dependent on what the is available on those environments. And now this is anecdotal, so I have no proof for this. Only people have told me this, and that is anecdotal evidence at best. But the quality of the AWS Linux used to be not that good. There was a lot of problems, and changes were not backwards compatible. Upgrading was an issue, and that's why a lot of people on Amazon went for other flavors of Linux on their Amazon environments. When Azure became also a dominant player next to Amazon and Google at a lesser extent, and still Amazon's way bigger still, but still Azure became something they had to look at. Azure actually had a better situation on the Linux for flavors they offered, because they partnered with things like OpenLogic and things like that. And I think Amazon did kind of a catch up, made sure that their AWS Linux became more stable, more user-friendly, easier to use, easier to predict, whatever, and that now people say, okay, if I'm on Amazon, why not take the Amazon Linux, because it probably will have the best connectivity marriage with the infrastructure behind it, because it's built by the same people, so you'd expect that to be the most very free experience, and that therefore now people, when you're on Amazon anyway, and a lot of people are on Amazon, well, yeah, just go for Amazon Linux, because it is now also good enough. It's not the right way of saying it. Again, anecdotal. I don't have any proof, or this is hearsay, to be honest, but it would kind of make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe the other, another change that's kind of curious. I mean, if you look at last year's Linux distributions, there's a huge swathe of them. You know, Ubuntu was significantly higher last year at 29%. The next closest was Alpine at 21%. But if you remove kind of Ubuntu from that equation, you know, going from 21 down to, let's say, 15%, or just over 15%, you know, more than half of the the results fit into that band of less than 5% difference, which is there's a very different picture sort of this year. And of those ones that are in that 5%, you know, Oracle, Linux, I find it weird that it was so high last year. And again, so high, but it's only within 5% of the others. But it was the third highest Linux distribution at 19.7%.
Yeah, you might argue nobody chose that. You get an Oracle database. You run Oracle Linux.
Yeah, I know, but I still find it weird. And I know there are organizations out there. I worked with a so again, another full disclosure. Wow, this episode is full of full disclosures. It's awesome. I did previously work at Red Hat. I worked at Red Hat just post IPO, just before I left, just before they became the first $1 billion open source company. Write us an email if you think I was the reason that they became a $1 billion open source company. The reason they became a, yeah, maybe. Let us know in the comments on YouTube. Anyway, but, you know, I worked with a very large telco, and they took the decision that to save themselves some money, they were going to move to Oracle Linux away from Red Hat. And it was an interesting time, because what actually happened is they realized that, you know, Oracle had been, and this is ancient history at this point, this is a long, long time ago, but Oracle had been telling them some porky pies of like, oh yeah, like, we'll just support your RHEL estate as you migrate over to us. The reality is that that's not the way that these kind of contracts actually work. If you have any supported RHEL in your estate, again, this was back then, this is many, many moons ago, maybe things have changed since then, but if you had any supported RHEL in your estate, then you actually had to have it all supported by Red Hat. And yeah, there was, you know, something in the contract. So all of a sudden, the this large telco had made a huge investment in Oracle Linux, and then started to have a whole bunch of compliance conversations with Red Hat, and their actual spend with Red Hat actually drastically increased over the coming years. And actually the relationship between the two organizations, that telco and Red Hat, got significantly better, because the organization started to realize just how much RHEL they had deployed, just how much value they got from it. And, you know, they did end up with a dual vendor strategy, as if you like, where they deployed Oracle Linux for some things and RHEL for others, and it all worked out and everyone lived happily ever after. But, you know, I still very, very rarely see or hear people talking about deploying Oracle Linux, apart from, as you say, if someone's deploying Oracle databases. Very often today it's deployed on Oracle Linux. But, you know, the fact that it's, you know, it was 19% last year, it's now down, it's dropped down to 16% this year, or this latest survey, I don't know, it still feels a little bit like the outlier to me.
Yeah. I got the three more things I want to mention on this one, and we got going over time again. First little note here, that in the last year's graph, we still had Red Hat Enterprise and SUSE Linux Enterprise in the list, and they're no longer in the list this year. So that's 10% that got redistributed across the other percentages, so that will give them all a little bump. But that's just a besides. One thing I want to mention here is that Red Hat CentOS Stream is working as intended, because adoption last year was 16% and this year is 9%, going down nicely. And I say as intended because for Red Hat, Stream is supposed to be the bleeding edge test stuff, not in production, but only in what's coming next, which is basically a good thing. What one could say here is that people last year made the not smart decision to move from CentOS to CentOS Stream on their production systems, and paid the price and have learned their lesson.
Ooh, that's a bit of a spicy one. Can I agree with that? I don't know. The fact that in a similar sort of vein, the fact that Fedora has dropped from 15% to 11% that would sort of follow that logic as well. Like Fedora has always been that's what sort of RHEL was derived from. Like a stable cut was taken from the world of Fedora, and that then became RHEL at a later date. At least, certainly, that was the case for many years when I was at Red Hat.
Yeah, that's true, but there's a big difference there because Fedora still had a release cycle.
True.
Quite CentOS 3 idea was that there's no release cycle; it just changes over time. And you have no idea what happens. So for me, those are really two big things. Fedora was a choice to go a little bit more bleeding edge, but still maintainable. CentOS 3 was designed to be unmanageable.
I'm not quite sure that was the selling it. I know what you mean, but I also find that, and maybe this is something else behind it. Like Arch Linux was also I'm desperately trying to remember what the term is. You know, a continuously released, continuously updated.
Because of a Docker. Build for Docker containers, right? Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one.
And the final one for me is that I'm looking forward to next year's graph where Ubuntu will reach probably 60 to 70%. Because this year, people are still 20% on CentOS. And CentOS is reaching their end of life now or next month-ish somewhere.
Yep.
So these are people that are lagging behind in moving to new stuff. Now, this could, of course, be legacy projects. We say, okay, it's CentOS is internal. We don't need to update that. Bad idea. Security is failures happen exactly in those places.
I've got a spicy one for you. If you remember all the way back to our first episode where we started talking about this, I wonder if this is a big part of demographic. There we go. God, my brain got there in the end. Clearly not enough coffee. I wonder if this is something around that is being significantly influenced by the demographic of the people that were surveyed, because moving from last year to this year, the top top category of folks surveyed was still technology. That's still the number one for both previous survey and this survey.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a huge shift of last time less than 5% of folks were in educational research, whereas this time round, nearly 17%, the second highest category of folks, are in the education or research space. And I wonder if folks that are in that space are perhaps a little bit less focused on, the fact that what they're using is end of life. Like, it's working right now, it's fine. It'll be fine to get us through this year, and next year we'll worry about what that is next.
I think you're doing a disservice to the educational people there, because again, IT is IT is IT, and they will do this. They will do their upgrades. Maybe not as quickly, but still. But the biggest problem I have with your reasoning there is that in my experience, and I've worked in government-funded HPC organization in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. which was very closely tied to the universities. And the only flavor of Linux that was allowed there, unless you had a really good reason why you couldn't, was Debian. And the reason behind that was because they are funded by grants and government money. So licensing was a bad thing. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux was not going to happen again unless you had a very good reason. But also the promotion of open source was very high in what they were supposed to be doing. And that's why typically they ended up with majority of Debian. So while I do believe that you have some kind of, it's less urgent for them perhaps to upgrade, but I think the overall installed base of CentOS will have been lower on those environments that it wouldn't be significant. But that again is totally based on absolutely no proof at all, just my own anecdotal experience, not just in the Netherlands, because again, I was doing HPC, which meant I was doing a lot of European-wide projects. And when you go to those HPC conferences, Debian, it's a train and it won't stop.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe my analysis is completely spurious. Maybe just as spurious as Jan's. Maybe you have better ideas. Comment on YouTube if you have a better suggestion. But I think
we need to put a sock in it. Is that the word? I wasn't even allowed to talk from the start by Dave, but I went ahead anyway. But I've talked all the talk I want to talk today, so this is all the time you have for today, unless you have something to add.
Nope, nothing from me.
Then please support our podcast, become a Patreon. Contributions do help us keep this very valuable content in the air. If you disagree, let us know by email and we'll improve. We are on YouTube, especially for this series of episodes. You might take an exception if you don't usually go on YouTube just to see all the pretty grass, pretty colors. It's nice. You can also go to our website at www.drawingoff.org. There's links there to all the pages we have across the internet. And again, if you have feedback, please let us know. Send an email to podcast@theroaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Purius John, because that's a new word I learned today.
My name is not Lobo Dave.
I look forward to, Dave talking and me being silent again next week.
Because you were so good at this time. Oh, dear. See you then.